Friends, yeah, I think we're about to go to Massachusetts and link up with Rich and Ear. But as I was saying, there is without a doubt a great sense of pride and a tremendous opportunity indeed for Irish America, for the Irish across America, to celebrate what is our month of celebration, to actually get to our first guest of the day, somebody who is, we have, an Irish American in particular, has held in very high esteem. Let's link with Congressman Richie Neal. And you're very welcome to the program there, Congressman.
Thank you, and a great tribute to you, 50 years, I must tell you. It's remarkable.
Yeah, well, you know, all the good jobs have been, for some reason, they bypassed me along the... same, well, thank you for that. But, you know, the same... As we've been aware, nobody better than yourself, being a great month of celebration for the, you know, for the Irish and Irish America and Irish culture, Irish history, there is a danger in the middle of this that probably a crisis point for Irish. For Northern Ireland, for the island of Ireland, and indeed for Irish America, is staring us in the face, and somehow, being as optimistic as we are as a race, we can't even imagine that you know, a hard border returning to Northern Ireland as a result of Brexit is even possible. You've taken the bull by the horns on this one, and some might say, you know, it will take America, it will take your efforts, it will take the Friends of Ireland caucus and many more to even make sure that this doesn't become a reality and then try to figure out how to get us back out of it, Richie Neal.
Yeah, well, you know, we're on the 20th anniversary of the Belfast Agreement, the Good Friday Agreement. And what's been remarkable about it, obviously, was the American dimension. So we are a very vested partner in the success of this achievement, and it has been a remarkable achievement. The emphasis for many of us in Irish America, as you recall, was on what is known as Strand 2 of the Belfast Agreement. And Strand 2 was Dublin-Belfast. And the elimination of the border was a very important part of that success story. Today, people travel back and forth, and I always use the example that I think is noteworthy, that I traveled almost 30 years ago on a congressional delegation visit to Ireland, and we went to Belfast, Derry, and Dublin with Speaker of the House Tom Foley. And as part of our fact-finding trip, one of the things that occurred to me was that between Donegal and Derry, there was a border patrol, and it was a militarized state. And on the evening when we were traveling from Donegal to Derry with the Speaker of the House on the bus, the British soldiers stopped the bus, mounted it, and searched it. And about 2 years ago, I was reminded again as I traveled across that border that the only recognition of any sort of a change was that my phone pinged. And I think that to highlight how successful the Good Friday Agreement is terribly important. The United Kingdom has now had almost 3 years to figure out what the divorce mechanism would be in Brexit. And we should remind all that they got themselves into this. And even though the rhetoric that comes from the government is positive on no border, no hard border, it nonetheless, in terms of implementation, is much more confusing. So we and the Friends of Ireland, when we visit with the Taoiseach this week, to congratulate him and all of the parties in the Republic of Ireland, and with the exception of the DUP in the north, all the parties on the island of Ireland, reject the idea of returning to any sort of a border and the recriminations that would come along with it. So I guess the point that we would like to make is that there have been few parts of American foreign policy that have been as important and as successful in recent times as what happened on the island of Ireland. And today you can see this unique alliance where if you look at polling data from the Irish Times just in the last 48 hours, it is clear that the people north and south do not want any sort of return to a border that would remind people of the bad old days.
Congressman Neal, can you spell out for us what the current situation is where the EU, who many would say have no reason, no great reason, to give concessions to Britain, considering that they're the ones who decided to, withdraw from the European Union. But they are putting Theresa May pretty much in a bind and saying, well, now, choose between the DUP, choose between your own political standing, and the hard border. We're not here to bend over backwards for you. Is that...
Well, the Friends of Ireland, we met with European Union leaders, and we met with them in the capital about 3 or 4 months ago, and we reinforced their position, encouraging them to remain unyielding in their opposition to any sort of a border mechanism, north and south. And in addition to which, European Union has made clear from day one that they are not going to fold on this issue. And there were two very important moments here. First, it was Prime Minister Cameron's decision to offer up the Brexit referendum question, in which he clearly, and I think he would acknowledge, he miscalculated what he thought the outcome would be. He was looking to strengthen his hand, only to find that the Leave voters took to the streets in greater numbers in terms of polling. And then the second, I think, misstep came when Prime Minister May, in an effort to strengthen what she thought would be the Conservative Party in Parliament, that misfired. And so she's down to now a 10-seat margin that is strengthened by the Democratic Unionist Party in the north of Ireland, who, by the way, polling on over the last 2 days has indicated that their position is not held by a majority of their own supporters as it relates to the border. So I think that this argument that is taking place right now is likely to fail again on Tuesday when the Parliament takes up the Prime Minister's request, and we will be back to, I assume, will be a decision to ask for a postponement from European Union on the ultimate divorce status.
Is that asking for a postponement? Will that be music to the ears? Is that a possibility, or is it a probability that that's the easiest outcome at this stage?
Well, I think at this moment she needs to find an exit strategy from the current polarization and the intransigence of members of her own party. And I think that you can see that the Labour Party, they've softened their position on another referendum question, although she has insisted that that second referendum question will not be forthcoming. But I think trying to buy some time here is probably the best position. But she has now on a number of occasions brought questions to Parliament, only to have them rejected by odd alliances. And I think that at the moment, everybody on the Leave side, they know what they're for, but they're not quite certain about how to get there. So I think this fractured position that the Conservative government has taken has not been helpful, but there is no question that European Union is not going to bow to the demands of the Conservative Party nor the DUP on the issue of the border. And I have given them my hearty congratulations for that firm position, and I have expressed this position to the United States Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer, who is a very good friend of mine, and the United Kingdom will be seeking a free trade agreement after they depart the European Union with the United States in what we call a bilateral agreement. That would be the two countries, and I've made it very clear that the border issue will be a consideration in those deliberations.
Yeah, and more than a consideration, because I think at this point, most people on both sides of the Atlantic would say that American influence may be the deal breaker here, you know, at this juncture. Might I ask you whether will Britain slow Theresa May and all involved, from Cameron to Theresa May, slow in inviting or seeking, you know, the connection and the influence of the U.S. in this? Would they, in hindsight, would they have been, would it have been an easier road if the U.S. Got involved earlier?
Well, I mean, I've expressed, we've had a series of meetings with the British ambassador to the United States, and I must tell you that he's been very good in his comments. He has indicated that it is the position that has been adopted by the parties in the British Parliament that there be no hard border. And we want to know what the interpretation of that means. But it is clear that Theresa May is looking for a temporary solution, and we're looking for maintaining what we call the permanent solution, and it's as simple as no hard border.
Period.
No customs checks, no checkpoints. You travel back and forth, and you wouldn't have any other knowledge, as I noted earlier, other than your phone pinging.
Yeah. On another topic that is, for many, a head-scratcher, we are now a year and a half into a situation in Northern Ireland, having over the decades and indeed centuries sought home rule in Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland sits there with no effective assembly, no effective government. Is that something that your colleagues, considering that, you know, Friends of Ireland are, you know, have been very influential. As a matter of fact, Friends of Ireland caucus is the primary, you know, connection to Northern Ireland.
As I mentioned earlier, we're a guarantor of the Good Friday Agreement, and I will say boldly that I have encouraged all of the political parties to go back to government and to get on with arguing over some of the more mundane issues of governing every day, for example, water rates and sewer rates and, you know, education and what the status of the North will be. But you're always better off, I think, within the crucible of politics, as difficult as it can be from time to time, to perhaps be shouting at each other in a parliamentary setting rather than on the streets. And that's what representative democracy does. It allows us to sort differences within the framework of the electoral process, and that is a terribly important consideration in the North. And I have been in full support of the Irish government's position, suggesting that all the parties go back to the negotiating table and get on with the basic tenets of day-to-day governance.
Your efforts, indeed, and that of you know, your colleagues are you know, sometimes we just take it for granted. Well, that's what, you know, all of you guys should be doing, and congresswomen, obviously. Can you give us paint a picture for us of your growing up and your awareness of your Irish roots, your Irish background?
Well, it's one of my grandmothers was born in Banbridge in County Down. And so there was that pronounced influence. And in my mother's family, they were from the Dingle Peninsula, and the Garveys. And there was one of my other grandmothers, her family was from Roscommon. And I knew them all very well. As you might expect, they were from huge families. One grandmother was one of 14. She had seven. And the other grandmother, while she had three, she was one of seven. And I think that The reminder here is that America welcomed them, and they welcomed them on the basis not so much of because they were overjoyed about culture and religion as much as they knew that in our economic system that in time they would take their rightful role. And I think that that's a very important consideration today. I think that one of the best speeches I've heard came a couple of years ago from then Taoiseach Enda Kenny, at the St. Patrick's Day luncheon, which we will be observing again on Thursday in the Rayburn Room of the Capitol, when Inda Kinney looked at the president and said, talking about the Irish immigration story and the idea of the undocumented who live in America in the shadows today, who can't return home for funerals and can't return home for weddings. And when Inda Kinney said, these people want to make America great too. And I think that should be part of this dialogue and discussion. But it's an extraordinary story. I used to enjoy pointing out to representatives of the Irish government that here in the Springfield area, I represented more Kerrymen than anybody in Ireland. This is where the Blasket Island people came. This is where families like my mother's came from. And the pronounced influence, we grew up living culturally Irish. And we were aware of the music. We were aware of the art. We were aware of the literature. And I must tell you that my, particularly the women in my family, they were particularly devoted to Catholicism. And I think that those were all heavy influences on our lives.
Again, there is, we've had a lot of controversy through the years, particularly in the largest parade and the oldest parade in the world here in New York City. Is it a Catholic parade? Is it a Catholic faith-only parade? I think we've gotten way, way past that, and only the begrudgers, might adopt that attitude. It is St. Patrick. It is the feast of St. Patrick, but it's also this great opportunity for us to show our Irishness and to show the best of what we have, because we've had, as we see with immigrants today, there wasn't that great Cade Mill of Fáilte, come on, we love having you and whatever. Immigration to the United States, Congressman Neal, has always had its difficulties. As we see today with the turmoil over immigrants in general, and particularly those from Mexico and whatever, and we're not going to delve into that one, do you see a ray of hope that immigration reform, which is, some would say, getting lost in the middle of all the daily turmoil, is there now with a congressional majority of Democrats, is that something that we can expect to be tabled, and is that in the immediate future, or are there a lot of other things to sort out before we even get that far?
Well, the whole issue there is, as you've described it, sorting it out. And currently, the stalemate is not working for anybody. And I think that the choice of words are very harmful to the deliberation. I believe that if people would, on all sides of the issue, would lower their voices and try to work through our democratic system to get, I think, immigration reform, where we might address the issue of permanent citizenship or temporary citizenship or visas for people that want to come and work. I mean, the American family now is having 1.7 children. That does not sustain growth in the economy. So I think we're going to need that influence and presence from those who would seek a better life. And at the same time, I think that it's important to acknowledge that we need to know who's in the country. So we cannot have open borders, but we have to have a system where people will be, I think, as Barack Obama used to note, register and get in line. And I think that the important point here is that the current argument in America is incendiary by its nature, but it's not working for anybody.
You're explained to us, if you will, most of your colleagues represent their own area and consider that to be a full-time job. But you're co-chairman of the New England Congressional Caucus. You've got six states relying, on your input. Does that make it six times more difficult? Does that mean when you're in the six states, those who are not all that pleased, you know, they'll take pot shots at you and say, hey, you, Neil, this is what we expect from you. Tell me.
Well, in this business that I've been in, and been at it for a long time, I mean, my primary responsibility, obviously, is representing Western and Central Massachusetts, but also as chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, I have broad responsibility now as it relates to tax, trade, tariffs, Social Security, Medicare, pensions, and welfare, and even management of the public debt. But on the New England caucus side, many of the – it's the smallest geographic region of the country, but for the most part in New England, we're all pretty much allied around the same issues, meaning that it's an area that has agriculture and it has finance and it has terrific hospitals and it has very well-regarded educational institutions. So we tend to rally around the points of agreement that we have, but I think that I've been stretched pretty thin now that I'm chairman of the Ways and Means Committee as well, but I don't intend to relinquish any of these spots.
You obviously... whereas we think that there is not that much happening outside, you know, New York City in the St. Patrick's Day Parade, and that's that image, and, you know, we're a bit pompous in that here, particularly with, you know, Brian O'Dwyer this year.
Yeah, congratulations to Brian. He's an old friend.
But there are a lot of... parades and celebrations, you know, for St. Patrick's month, and it does take us a month. But could you bring us to the significance of the political aspects, and how effective is it to have each year Irish government leaders, spokespersons from north and south of Ireland, you know, come speak with you, your colleagues, you know, the president, the vice president of the United States. What does that actually do? Sometimes it's a bit of tongue-in-cheek and say, oh, yeah, they would come give the shamrock and that's the end of that. But it does give, you know, further opportunities for dialogue, and this year is very special.
Well, I want to give a shout-out to Holyoke, Massachusetts, where I'll be a week from tomorrow in one of the best parades in America. It's extraordinary in terms of the success and the devotion that the participants offer year in and year out. I think the celebration of St. Patrick's Day around here starts 6 months ago, to be honest with you, and it never seems to recede. And at the same time, it's very remarkable that a nation north and south of about 6 million people in the island of Ireland command the presence that Ireland does on Capitol Hill. The idea that presidents, speakers of the House, at Speaker Pelosi's luncheon on Thursday, the Irish government and all the political parties on the island are generally participants in the luncheon. We'll be introducing the Taoiseach on Wednesday night at the American Ireland Fund dinner in Washington. And it is, I think, in so many ways, a great story of not only culture and history, but that for days, this really relatively small country will command such an oversized presence on Capitol Hill.
Yeah. We can't let Holyoke is very special.
It is very special.
Both Áine Sheridan and myself were more than honored a few years back there to be the ambassadors. A huge, not only title, but a huge honor, which we won't forget in a while, of the St. Patrick's Day parade. And it's an amazing place because we... because of Holyoke, it has such historic ties, you know, to Ireland and to the ingenuity of a lot of people who came from Ireland, who came because if they were welcome in New England, and New England with the Erie Canal and several of the other tough jobs, it's because they came to work and they left their mark.
They sure did, and in Holyoke in particular, even though it's within almost a stone's throw of Springfield, in Springfield it was a huge influx of carrymen, but yeah. In Holyoke, which is just about 4 or 5 miles up the street, most of the settlers came from Balmullet in County Mayo out through Black Sod.
Now you're talking. Yeah.
And there's a huge, the antecedents of much of that city in terms of the mills, and in terms of the canals, as you know, it was the Irish labor and labor unions that helped to give them the standard and quality of life that they've had. And I must tell you that the people that will come back to Holyoke next Sunday, they come back from all over America to celebrate this remarkable contribution that Ireland has made to America, and the sustenance that we have derived from America still, I think, comes from many of those rural areas where many of the early settlers came from.
I want to, first of all, thank you for joining us, this morning, and also maybe this is a very good time since we have the attention of just about everybody across America, to point out that the American influence is as important, if not equally, to the Good Friday Agreement. This has to work out, and there is, yes, a role for those who feel that Ireland is doing very nicely. Thank you, and everybody is getting along, and the peace process is taking away. But definitely, I think that, your constituents don't need to be kicking your door down, because you have, and indeed your colleagues and the Friends of Ireland have, let your constituents know that, yes, there is a problem. I think this will be a good time to spread the word that, yes, Irish America does care. There is a role, not only for Irish American influencers like yourself, but for everybody to say, look, we know what's happening, and we want to support, Northern Ireland, the people of Northern Ireland. Catholic, Protestant, Unionist, Nationalist—that indeed is very significant, very important. And I want to thank you very much for what you have done, through the decades. And hopefully, there will be good news on Brexit, and no better time for the influence of you, your colleagues. Including, of course, Brendan Boyle, who are really making sure that in the midst of all of this, tremendously significant decision that has to be made, that America, very much there, we're very much there, and again, solidifying what you have agreed to, and that you put your foot to the fire in getting, a resolution for Brexit that, in fact, will deliver on what was promised.
Well, thank you, Adrian, and I want to say that it was Irish America that helped make the difference in brokering the Good Friday Agreement, and I think that we have to remain steadfast that the success that has been achieved remains for all of us, with no border. And certainly I want to wish everybody a very happy St. Patrick's Day.
And thank you again.
Thank you.
Have a good one. All right. Okay. Friends, what a great advocate for all things Irish, for Northern Ireland, and indeed his influence in the Friends of Ireland caucus has been just extraordinary. Extraordinary. You know,